I'd like to talk about a slightly different title than is in the program, Logistic Maps and Preparing for BNEES Analysis. And I'd like to, first of all, thank Monica and Anna for inviting me to speak here. I'm an amateur really in the field of dynamical systems, and I mostly work on modeling sort of industrial stochastic and financial stochastic processes. I'd like to thank my long ago PhD supervisor, Chris Essex, and my long ago postdoc boss, John Shiner, for some ideas here, and both NSERC and the Swiss National Science Foundation for funding. This talk's going to fit into two halves. The first half, I'm going to talk about something that is well known to those who know it well. Everyone sort of knows it, but a lot of people don't know it. And if you don't know it, it's kind of fun to learn about. So first half is not any of my stuff. And then I'm going to apply what I've talked about in the first half of the talk to a problem I think is interesting. Okay, so we all know about the discrete logistic map. And when R equals 4, it has a very particular format. And we all know about that period doubling and all that kind of thing, but let's not talk about that. We know that it has very chaotic behavior, and if I have one particular initial condition of pi over 4, I'll get that type of trajectory, and if I have a very close one, I'll get a different looking trajectory, and the error between the two will very quickly, you know, become as big as it possibly can, and at which point it just sort of flips around. Okay, so this is classic sensitive dependence on initial conditions. Okay, so we can't predict what's going to happen, so let's pretend that we don't even know what the initial point is, and that the initial point is just drawn from a uniform probability distribution. And I'm just going to simulate this. Okay, so we don't know even where the initial point is drawn from. It's drawn from a uniform probability distribution. And then we're going to see what happens to that probability distribution as points go forward. So this is just a simulation of that with a histogram of 100,000 random points. And look what happens. So this was the initial distribution. It's a simulation of uniform. We evolve it forward one step under the map. We get this weird looking thing. Again, we get that. And we keep on evolving it forward, and things are not really changing a whole lot here. I mean, they are, but you can imagine that's just sort of noise due to the fact we only have finitely many points. And then we get bored and we stop. And it looks like if we evolve things forward long enough, we have this probability distribution that governs the steady state of that probability density. Okay? All right. So what we saw there was we had this completely chaotic pointwise trajectory that led to this very regular behavior in the realm of probability densities. Okay, and actually almost immediately became very regular and hit this sort of steady state. So then the question is, that's an interesting experiment, but can we put any mathematics on that? And I'm going to emphasize yet again that this is not my work. There's a great yellow book called Chaos, Fractals, and Noise that if you haven't seen, you should make it your business to see. And it's all in that. Everything I'm going to talk about for the next few minutes is in that book. So let's put a little bit of math on this. I don't want to get really into the details here. I'm just going to sort of give you the first-year calculus-level description of how all this works. So there's a dynamical system. Xn plus 1 is S of Xn. Fn of X is a family of probability densities on the space this dynamical system lives on, X. So for instance, it has a normalization condition applying to it. A is some subset of X, which we're going to assume isn't too wacky or anything. And we're going to assume that S isn't too pathological either. You know, again, this is first-year calculus description. If you want the details, see Lasota and Mackey's book. And if that's the case, we can imagine that all of the points at the n plus first time step, I got a pointer here, that live in set A at the n plus first time step must have come from the inverse image of the set A at the nth time step. Yeah? So that's an equation which should apply to this sequence of densities if everything is not too badly behaved. Okay, so that's how it works in general. Now let's start specializing it so we can look at that discrete logistic map example again. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to specialize x, in fact, not to be the reals, but to be the unit interval. And we'll specialize then our map to be this. And let's actually not make that the inverse image of the unit interval. Let's make it a set A. So there's a mistake there. That should be the set S inverse of 0x, not 0,1. Makes a big difference. And it turns out that we can think of this map on the functions, on the densities, as itself being an operator, and it's called the Perrin-Frobenius operator. And I think the next slide I'll talk a little bit about that, but we can further specialize and actually look at the discrete logistic map, like what we started with R equals 4, and we can get the inverse image of the set 0x using just some trivial, quadratic formula. Keep on grinding through the game plan here, and we end up with this. If I have, and those would probably be Fn's, and that should be PFn, right? If we're keeping with the idea that this is what's happening at the nth time step, and I want to figure out how to move that probability density forward to what's happening at the n plus first time step. Okay? All right. So let me just talk a little bit about P. I guess it's kind of clear that P is a linear operator, even though the operator that we built it from was a nonlinear one. And that, at first, is surprising, but when you think about it, it isn't actually that surprising. But before we talk about that, let's just see what actually happens here. If I start, the experiment I showed you before, I started out with the uniform density, f0 of x was 1 on the interval 0, 1. And then I experimentally evolved that forward. I'm going to do that algebraically here. And you see it quite soon gets quite messy. It suggests, we're going to take a little digression here. That suggests, the form of that suggests an ansatz. You start getting x1 minus x appearing out front all the time. And if I throw that ansatz into the original functional equation, I'm going to get a new functional equation, which is somehow nicer. It's sort of, let me just show you what the, that one had this sort of ugly x dependence actually in the equation, as well as in the argument of the functions, whereas this one doesn't. Yeah. And if we use that map instead, this is totally a digression. You can get this nice, really stupid way of evaluating pi, using this sort of infinite sum of nested set of infinite sums, and it's probably the slowest way to convert to compute pi in the world. So anyway, that's a digression. But now I just want to show you that the analytics that we got actually work for the experiment that I showed you, and sure enough, they do. That's looking good. Okay, so that was all just designed to show you that, first of all, this interesting stuff happens to the underlying probability densities, and second of all, that we can make a mathematical description of how all that works, and that if we do, we get this linear map that embodies all of the probability level behavior of that dynamical system. And the obvious question when confronted with a map of that nature is, does it have a fixed point? And the answer is, we already sort of saw that in, we saw how that might come about. This is known already to Ulam in 1948, this result. It's a really nice, I see some people in the applied math department at Western here, some students, and you may remember a Laplace transform question like this that showed up on a comprehensive exam a few years ago. You can get that pi very nicely using Laplace transforms, in fact. I'm going to show them later. Okay, so the continuous time analog to this discrete map is really the same as running the method of lines for solving first order PDEs backwards, right? And if you throw a little bit of noise in, you get your Fokker-Planck and Kolmogorov and all the stuff that Mary, in fact, was talking to us about this morning. You get the same link between ODEs and PDEs that comes out of stochastic ODEs and PDEs that comes out of the Fokker-Planck equation is what you're seeing here. Except you don't need to be stochastic even. Okay, so that's the first half of my talk, and that's what everybody knows. But hopefully you now know, some of you may know something you didn't already know, having seen that. Okay, so now let's get to a sort of generic philosophical question about modeling, which is, what resemblance does a model problem have to the real problem that we're modeling? Right, that's something we always have to worry about when we're modeling, as opposed to just doing mathematics for the sake of it. So we have to ask the right questions here, and I'm going to show you something to do with chaotic modeling, which involves this concept of called sensitive dependence on neglected dynamics, which seems to be very perplexing if you're looking at trajectories. But if you're looking at the underlying densities, what happens? And that's what I want to talk about now. Okay, so let's forget about the logistic map for now, because although it's pretty easy, it's actually going to be too hard to easily show what I'm going to try to show. And let's look at an even easier map, which is the binary shift map, right? And this is the absolutely canonical model for sensitive dependence on initial conditions, because every time you apply it, you're moving over one bit and you're losing one bit of accuracy, right? So this comes with a Perrin-Frobenius equation, which is really even easier than the one we already saw. And in fact, it's completely clear that a solution to this equation has to be, you know, the value f of x equals 1 for all x, right? Because then you have 1 plus 1 equals 2 divided by 2 equals 1. That works. And there are actually lots of nice theorems talking about what happens with these Perrin-Frobenius maps in the limit where f equals 1, in the case where the invariant density is 1. Okay, so this is a very bad map point-wise. I mean, it forgets everything very quickly, and it's going to be very sensitive dependence on initial conditions. But it's a very, very nice map probabilistically. In fact, if I start out here saying I don't know where my initial point is, it's anywhere in the unit interval 0, 1 with equal probability, in that, you know, that probabilistic description of the system, in fact, is already invariant. You know, it never actually changes. So now I want to look at a two-dimensional example lifted up from this. Okay. So I'm going to take two shift maps, and I'm going to diffusively couple them together with a small parameter epsilon. It doesn't really have to be small, but let's say it's small. Okay. And so what's that doing? It's saying that xn plus 1 is a binary shift map, but then there's some movement from the y-axis into the x-axis happening in a diffusive kind of way, right? Okay. So if I do if I plot xn plus 1 versus xn in the uncoupled map, I'm going to see that I get this thing that looks like the graph of 2x mod 1. If I do the same thing for one of the degrees of freedom, for the x degree of freedom, here, I don't have epsilon equals 0. I've got epsilon equals small. But I still plot xn plus 1 versus xn. In other words, I don't know there is a y, right? I'm looking at this dynamics, and I think there's just an x variable. I don't even know there is a y variable, right? Now I plot xn plus 1 versus yn, xn plus 1 versus xn, and I say, oh, yeah, I've got a shift map here. The funny thing is, if you're trying to actually simulate this with epsilon equals 0, the best way to simulate it is actually to throw in, not the best way, but a good way to simulate it is actually to throw in epsilon not equal to 0. Because if you don't, you're soon going to push all of the bits that you actually know in your initial conditions away, and you're going to be left with, it's going to look like it converges to some constant if you do it in a really naive way. Whereas if you put in a little bit of numerical noise here, it actually keeps kicking it away from that wrong fixed point that it's otherwise seeking. And this is some of the work in the 80s by Boyarsky talks about this kind of thing. Okay. Now, here's the sense of dependence on initial dynamics. If I assume that the readout from the x-coordinate of this system is actually coming from just the standard binary shift map, if I assume that, and I know the initial condition is exactly right, which I never know in reality, I'm still going to get the error ramping up to as big as it can be reasonably rapidly because of the fact that I'm missing the existence of the second set of dynamics. Right? That's no big surprise there. Of course, you're making a little error right away by ignoring epsilon, and that effectively makes it look like you have the initial conditions wrong, and then that propagates forward just like it always would. Right, so there's no surprise there, but the question that comes to mind is, I can fool myself into thinking this is a one-dimensional map, but that's going to lead to huge prediction errors if I'm trying to predict this thing I should never be predicting in the first place, right? Because it's completely unstable. Does the same kind of problem occur at the level of densities? And you can think about that. It's actually quite a lot of work to generalize what the proper Perrin-Frobenius equation is. And you end up with that kind of functional equation operating on the densities, which are now a function of x and y. And you look at that and you say, how can I solve this? Well, first of all, am I doing my algebra correctly? And maybe I am. If I throw epsilon 0 into that previous thing, I end up with this. And then if I say, well, if epsilon is equal to 0, then I actually have uncoupled the two sets of dynamics. And so I should make an ansatz that reflects that. If I plug that in, I in fact do get it reducing exactly to where it started. Okay, so we believe it might actually be the correct equation. And then we think of some other symmetries that might exist there. So here's one particular ansatz that you could pick. And if you plug that in, you actually reduce that two-dimensional functional equation into a functional equation of functions with one variable. Throw in a little bit more symmetry, and you end up with that reasonably easy-looking guy, which also reduces to what you want it to reduce to if epsilon is equal to 0. And it turns out that you have a delta function solution, which is a bit of a problem because you always have delta function solutions lurking around here, and they just show you the fixed point of the original map. Like, you could get a delta function solution sitting in that logistic map fixed point, probability level fixed point. It's just that it wouldn't be stable and it wouldn't really exist. However, if that is a delta function, then you're seeing that if you integrate out that unknown degree of freedom, you do end up recovering exactly the same probabilistic description as you would have had in the first place. Okay. There's only one other linear ansatz that works. If you throw x plus alpha y in a function, it's only going to give you something that, you know, fits when x is plus 1 or minus 1, and we already talked about minus 1. Plus 1 is the other case. That leads to this functional equation, which looks like it should be reasonably easy to solve, but which I admit I, you know, haven't been able to solve in any way. So if anyone's interested in math puzzles, this might be a fun thing to play with. That, in fact, puts me out of time. So I'm just going to talk about some conclusions. It would be nice to solve that functional equation and see what happened, and it would be nice to do this for at least some other maps to get a really hands-on, nuts-and-bolts feeling for what was going on here. All right, thank you.